The Reaper's Image by Stephen King. We moved it last year, and quite an operation it was, too, Mr. Carlin said as they mounted the stairs. Had to move it by hand, of course, no other way. We insured it against accident with Lloyd's before we even took it out of the case in the drawing room, only firm that would insure it for the sum we had in mind. Spangler said nothing. The man was a fool. Johnson Spangler had learned a long time ago that the only way to talk to a fool was to ignore him. Insured it for $250,000, Mr. Carlin resumed when they reached the second floor landing. His mouth quirked in a half-bitter, half-humorous line. And a pretty penny it cost, too. He was a little man, not quite fat, with rimless glasses and a tan bald head that shone like a varnished volleyball. A suit of armor, guarding the mahogany shadows of the second floor corridor, stared at them impassively. It was a long corridor, and Spangler eyed the walls and hangings with a cool, professional eye. Samuel Claggart had bought in copious quantities, but he had not bought well. Like so many of the self-made industry emperors of the late 1800s, he had been little more than a pawn shop rooter, masquerading in collector's clothing, a connoisseur of canvas monstrosities, trashy novels and poetry collections, and expensive cowhide bindings, and atrocious pieces of sculpture, all of which he considered art. Up here the walls were hung, festooned was perhaps a better word, with imitation Moroccan drapes, numberless and no doubt anonymous Madonnas holding numberless haloed babes while numberless angels flitted hither and thither in the background, grotesque scrolled candelabra, and one monstrous and obscenely ornate chandelier surrounted by a saliciously grinning nymphet. Of course, the old pirate had come up with a few interesting items. The law of averages demanded it. And if the Samuel Claggart Memorial Private Museum, guided tours on the hour, admission $1 adults, 50 cents children, nauseating, was 98% blatant junk, there was always the other 2%, things like the Coombs long rifle over the hearth in the kitchen, the strange little camera obscura in the parlor, and of course the D'Iver looking glass was removed from downstairs after a rather unfortunate incident, Mr. Carlin said abruptly, motivated apparently by a ghastly, glaring portrait of no one in particular at the base of the next staircase. There had been others, harsh words, wild statements, but this was an attempt to actually destroy the mirror. The woman, a Miss Sandra Bates, came in with a rock in her pocket. Fortunately, her aim was bad, and she only cracked a corner of the case. The mirror was unharmed. The Bates girl had a brother. No need to give me the dollar tour, Spangler said quietly. I'm conversant with the history of the D'Iver glass. Fascinating, isn't it? Carlin cast him an odd, oblique look. There was that English duchess in 1709, and the Pennsylvania rug merchant in 1746, not to mention... I'm conversant with the history, Spangler repeated quietly. It's the workmanship I'm interested in. And then, of course, there's the question of authenticity. Authenticity, Mr. Carlin chuckled, a dry sound as if bones had stirred in a cupboard beneath the stairs. It's been examined by experts, Mr. Spangler. So was the Lemlier Stradivarius. So true, Mr. Carlin said with a sigh, but no Stradivarius ever had quite the unsettling effect of the D'Iver glass. Yes, quite. Spangler said in his softly contemptuous voice. He understood now that there would be no stopping Carlin. He had a mind which was perfectly in time with the age. Quite. They climbed the third and fourth flights in silence. As they grew closer to the roof of the rambling structure, it became oppressively hot in the dark upper galleries. With the heat came a creeping stench that Spangler knew well, for he had spent all his adult life working in it. A smell of long-dead flies in shadowy corners, of wet rot and creeping woodlice behind the plaster. The smell of age. It was a smell common only to museums and mausoleums. He imagined much the same smell might arise from the grave of a virginal young girl 40 years dead. Up here the relics were piled helter-skelter in true junk-sop profusion. Mr. Carlin led Spangler through a maze of statuary, frame-splintered portraits, pompous gold-plated bird cages, the dismembered skeleton of an ancient tandem bicycle. He led him to the far wall, where a stepladder had been set up beneath a trapdoor in the ceiling. A dusty padlock hung from the trap. Off to the left, an imitation Adonis stared at them pitilessly with blank, pupilless eyes. One arm was outstretched, and a yellow sign hung from the wrist, which read, "Absolutely no admittance." Mr. Carlin produced a key ring from his jacket pocket, selected a key, and mounted the stepladder. He paused on the third rung, his bald head gleaming faintly in the shadows. "I don't like that mirror," he said. "I never did. I'm afraid to look into it. I'm afraid I might look into it one day and see what the rest of them saw."
"They saw nothing but themselves," Spangler said.
Mr. Carlin began to speak, stopped, shook his head, and fumbled above him, craning his neck to fit the key properly into the lock. "Should be replaced," he muttered. "It's damn!" The lock sprung suddenly and swung out of the hasp. Mr. Carlin made a fumbling grab for it and almost fell off the ladder. Spangler caught it deftly and looked up at him. He was clinging shakily to the top of the stepladder, face white in the brown semi-darkness.
"You are nervous about it, aren't you?" Spangler said in a mildly wondering tone.
Mr. Carlin said nothing. He seemed paralyzed.
"Come down," Spangler said, "please, before you fall."